This is the Pete Bradley Show podcast, episode 17. It's our first podcast of the new year, and I hope the holidays were nice for you. January 4th, we had our first bad storm of the year. Today, we're going to talk about that storm. We'll talk about what goes into closing a business with a small business owner. And we'll talk to Eric Fisher, the chief meteorologist at WBZ-TV4, for some thoughts. It never fails.
Gotta get the bread and milk. I gotta get the bread and milk. They said snow! I gotta get the bread and milk!
I wasn't at the grocery store, but I was in a gas line. I think this last storm was one of the most difficult to predict or plan for, that old rain-snow line. Based on what I know from years of doing shows and talking to friends at AccuWeather, and from posts that I read from plow drivers and DPW crews, this storm in Greater New Bedford was a nightmare because of all the rain and then the flash freeze. The length of the cold spell didn't help either. While many people are happy when they get a day off from work, it's a difficult decision if you're the small business owner. I talked to Tim Peterson. He's the owner of Synergy Physical Therapy.
For a small business, if we're not open, we're not making money.
Right.
And margins, and, you know, we seem like we're a medical business, but margins are not particularly big in therapy. So, you know, we need to stay open. We need to see the patients we need to see. I recognize that we are, we're on the coast, so it makes a difference as far as, you know, how much rain we get compared to other places, but it makes it very difficult. So last year, you know, I may have closed three times because they were hyping a snowstorm, you know, these big storms that were coming. And it's hard because you have people who, you know, either I'm going to sit in my kitchen at home and make phone calls to cancel patients, but there are people who need their therapy as well. So when they're saying it's a big storm, I have to make a decision the day before, partly for the patients, partly because my staff has children that will be staying home. And so when it ends up staying as an entire rainstorm that it did once or twice last year, it's not like we're a retail store where we can just say, oh no, well, let's go and open for the day anyway.
Yeah.
But I understand that being near the coast, it's a little more difficult, but I think part of journalism is, drama and hype. So, I think that happens a lot of times with forecasting. And I also think they don't want to get caught on the other side of a storm saying, you know, it's probably going to be a bad storm, but I don't think so. And there's a fair chance it'll stay as rain. And then everybody gets walloped and, they get nailed for under forecasting. So
right.
I think it's better for them to over forecast than under. So I think it's a difficult thing for us. In the therapy business or in the medical business, because you hate to have people not getting the treatments and the visits that they need. So
right. Did you feel like you made the wrong decision, or did you feel like you made the wrong decision and then you were justified? Or
I think at 8 or 9 o'clock in the morning, when I made the post that I did on Facebook, I was feeling like I made the wrong decision because what they were saying on the news that I had heard was that it was probably going to start at 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning.
Right.
And so when 8 or 9 o'clock came and I was still seeing pouring rain, I thought, ugh. Then at noon, when my computer had shut down 3 times and I was getting absolutely no work done, I felt like maybe I had made the right decision this time. But again, that's the sentiment of an owner as well. I know that when staff members have children that are home from school for the day, and it becomes a much easier decision for them to stay home with their children because it creates havoc with the children home. So it's a mixed bag. But I think that, as far as the weather goes and forecasting it, there's always that, yes, this has the potential to be a big one.
I posted a question on Facebook asking if you think the media overhypes these storms, and what is your pet peeve? Well, a few people complained about how they're naming winter storms now. But not everybody is, as my friend Tim DeRozier pointed out. Tim studied meteorology at the U.S. Air Force Academy. He said the Weather Channel is the only company to use names on winter storms. In 2012, they unilaterally decided to begin using names. The National Weather Service, the government agency that handles weather for the U.S., does not recognize names used by third-party entities, like the Weather Channel. This can be a very important distinguishment for insurance companies, as some have different policies when it comes to damage from named storms. If they try to say the storm is named in the winter, it is not legitimate, since it did not come from the federal government. I had the pleasure last night to talk to Eric Fisher, the chief meteorologist at WBZ-TV, and I brought up some of your pet peeves. But first, we started by asking what a typical day was like doing the weather for WBZ-TV4.
The days usually, if there's nothing going on, it's getting into the office around 2 and forecasting and making graphics and talking with producers and taping stuff. And you know, we've got our newscast 5 to 6:30. Sometimes do the national news after that. And then we get about a half hour dinner break and we've got the 8 to 9. And then another break to maybe write a blog post or two and answer emails. And then the news at 11 and do it again the next day.
Well, that's a long day, huh? Nine hours or so? And then when a storm comes...
Quick days. If there's actual weather, then it's a lot longer.
When a storm comes, you just pack a bag, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Now, you're from New England, and you decided to come back here, right?
Right. I grew up in between western Massachusetts and northern Connecticut around Hartford. And then I spent a few years at the Weather Channel in Atlanta, and then moved back up here back in 2013. I've been here ever since.
This is a challenge for meteorologists?
Oh, this is the place to be. If you want to forecast, Boston area is it. We've got the most interesting weather, the most diverse weather, most difficult weather. There's plenty to keep us busy even in a quiet stretch, at least a quiet one for us.
Now, one of the things I've noticed, I live in New Bedford, you're in Boston, it can be a totally different forecast.
I mean, that's what makes it so interesting here. I mean, I always try to impress that the number on the 7-day actually kind of stinks. It's not very representative in many situations of what we get across the area in a given day. We try to add some extra info on that, but you know, that's why it pays to watch or listen to an entire forecast, because many days we'll have a 20 to 30 degree spread over our little tiny viewing area, which is just basically the South Coast and Cape Cod to southern New Hampshire, and that's all we're really covering.
It must be difficult for you, though, because you can have so many different... I mean, with the last storm, we started out with a heavy rain here in New Bedford for quite a few hours, and then we had the ice, which has really screwed up our roads, and then the snow, whereby just what... My wife was in Dedham yesterday, and there's a foot and a half of snow.
I mean, it's a challenge. Every winter storm, even the easy winter storms, are a challenge because... When we look at these, we're not just forecasting, okay, this much snow will fall, and it will all perfectly add up at a 10-to-1 ratio, 10 inches of snow for 1 inch of liquid, and that will be that. I mean, you're trying to figure out what's the temperature of the grass, or the road, or the air, or the level at which the snowflakes are developing in the clouds, and will it stack up at a normal rate, or will it be more compressed, or will it melt on contact, or will ice weigh it down, and then if you're off by 2 inches, someone's going to be angry at you on how it actually looks in their yard.
There's
a lot that goes into it.
I've always said I could not do what you do because there is so much, like you said, people are always saying, well, they blew it again, you know. What do you say to the people? One of the things I'm hearing, because I put on Facebook today that I was going to do this podcast, one of the things I'm hearing is people say, these guys are always hyping these storms. Now, how do you answer that?
I mean, I don't think there's any incentive to hype anything. I think anything that would discredit your honesty and your straightforwardness with information is a detriment. I don't even see the purpose or the reason why anyone would do it. Yeah. I try to save my strongest language for things that I think are the most impactful or the most damaging, and I try to keep it pretty low-key and straightforward outside of that. One thing I noticed with this last storm was this bomb cyclone nonsense that I think it was in one article somewhere, and then it was just everywhere. And I found it really fascinating because, I mean, any New Englander would know watching the news. We talk about bombogenesis every single winter. You know, I talked to Barry during our coverage, and like, Barry, how many years have you been talking about bombogenesis on the air? He said, 40. But it seemed like it came across as this brand new thing and took on a life of its own. It's tough to predict when something will catch like that.
Do you think it's social media has had a big impact on that?
Absolutely. The number one impact, because we all live in this echo chamber now. You know, it used to be, and not long ago, I mean, people forget, YouTube, iPhones, Facebook, Twitter, they're all only 10 years old. I mean, we really haven't had it for that long, but now it seems to consume our lives. And before that, you know, you talk to your friends at work, or you might have, you know, some parents at the schoolyard who you're chatting with, or your family, and that's all you'd really talk about with a news story or anything that was going on in the world. And now we just have everything magnified. It gets into this chamber, and everyone's checking their Instagram and their Twitter feed and their Facebook, and there's articles and there's memes and there's pictures, and it makes things seem so much bigger when they're not any bigger. They're basically the same storms that we've had for years and years. Most of the time, it just, it becomes deafening, all the information that we're bombarded with.
We have a family friend who's a meteorologist with the Air Force, and he said, he told me today that bombogenesis has been around since the 1940s.
Yeah, I mean, there's plenty of just general scientific papers describing it. It's been around forever. We've talked about it forever. We talk about it every winter. But now you see the Instagram posts of, like, bombogenesis specials at restaurants and bars, and it becomes like a marketing thing, or people... I actually didn't even retweet anyone who sent me a picture or report with the hashtag bomb cyclone in it, because I didn't want to spread it any more than it already spread. I didn't want to be responsible for it.
Somebody else pointed out, the fact that we see the weather over and over again, but I would think it's because you do more newscasts now. There's a 4 o'clock and a 4:30 and a 5 and a 5:30.
Mm-hmm.
Correct?
Don Kent didn't know how good he had it.
He's a great meteorologist,
but for most of our storms, you did a 6 o'clock news and a 10, and then good night.
That was it.
Not the case anymore.
One of the other things someone mentioned on Facebook was the fact that you always send people out in the weather to tell us not to go out in the weather. So, I mean, you know, I was watching poor Pamela Gardner down there in Scituate, wondering if she'd ever get home.
So, haha, here's the key. We usually put people where they live.
Okay.
So a lot of reporters tend to end up in the very nearby geographical region at which they live. So we don't send people usually out for long distances. And we happen to have a meteorology staff that is well spread out around the area, which is kind of nice. So it's usually not as big as it looks. I mean, when we go to cover a storm, we try to go about it logistically as easy as possible. We book hotel rooms if we think travel is going to be too dangerous for our crews to be out there. They're always jumping into a truck, you know, in between the live reports, and not standing out in the cold the whole time. So sometimes it looks really bad, and a lot of us want to go out. I mean, Pamela wants to go out. I want to be out. It's
really
not someone telling me. I would much rather be out in the storm than inside the studio.
Really? Why is that?
Oh, yeah.
Why is that?
Because you can feel it and see it, and it's so much easier to talk about something when it's something that you've experienced yourself. You know, I know that I've become, I think, a better meteorologist over time, visiting more disasters, reporting from different types of weather, because then you get to really see and feel the impact, and then you also get to know when something is a big deal and when it's not a big deal.
Yeah. The guys at AccuWeather used to get bored if we had a 7-day stretch of nice weather. Same thing with you?
Oh, yeah. There are weeks where I'm falling asleep at the desk. Like, I don't know what to do with myself.
I know when I asked you if you would come on the podcast, you said, yeah, it's a quiet week. Call me. Otherwise,
a couple of nights here.
We would not have spoken last week, I'm sure.
No, the busy days are just really, really busy. I mean, during that storm, I woke up in the morning. I did some national radio interviews. I did some local radio interviews. I grabbed a coffee, came into work at 10. And then it was here until midnight, and literally was on the air from about 11 a.m. till midnight, almost straight. It's a lot of talking.
And that's something else that has changed over the years, isn't it? Like you said, there used to be a 6 o'clock and maybe an 11 o'clock, and that was it.
I mean, for the big storms, stations would stay on more, but, you know, a big change over time is how easy it is to gather news. We always would have these talks with Jack Williams. Everyone knows Jack.
Right.
And you would say, people would go, oh, the news was so, the news was so much better back in the day. And Jack would say, are you out of your mind? He's like, do you know the things that we can do now that we could never do 20 or 30 years ago? how easy it is to gather video and stories and go live. I mean, live reports have become so easy for so many outlets. We can bring backpack live, basically a live truck that you wear on your back and go from anywhere. Like we can do more than we could back in the past. And David Wade actually had a nice comment during the last storm here. He goes, he said, you know, back in the day, the only images that we could share are the ones that we found. I mean, the flooding that we saw at the coast 30 years ago would only be shown on the news if our crews happened to be in the right place at the right time. We are bombarded with video and pictures from everybody.
I was talking to someone today about how, you know, everyone compares storms to the blizzard of 78. And I don't know if there will ever be a storm that affects us that way, because at the time, we didn't have the technology to know it was coming or how bad it would be, right?
I completely agree with you. I think there's no reason to ever have a blizzard of 78 again. I mean, we're to the point where I look at guidance and I look at data at night and I start to identify storm risks 2 to 3 weeks in advance. And I don't even want to talk about them. I don't want to talk about the storm until 5 days in advance, because you can never really get into the big details of a storm until you're close to it.
Well, even last week when you were showing this, this storm forming down Louisiana, I thought, well, how does he know it's going to come? But obviously I don't have the science background that you have.
Right.
But
and if you look at the the forecast storm track from the Weather Prediction Center, one of the national agencies, they basically had the exact storm track like 7 days in advance forecast. I mean, people definitely take for granted how good weather forecasting has become since back in the day. We're still going to blow them every once in a while, but in general, I mean, nothing's going to sneak up on you. You're not going to get a storm out of nowhere the morning that you wake up. Like 78, people didn't trust the forecast, even the snowy ones, because there had been several busts right before it.
Right.
And so they didn't have confidence in the weather information that they were getting. And you look at, say, the hurricane in 38. I mean, people went to school and work that morning, and they got caught in one of the worst hurricanes in the history of New England. That will never happen again.
That was a lot of fun, and my thanks to Eric Fisher at Channel 4. My friend Dean DeVore at AccuWeather said his pet peeve is that people don't hear what meteorologists actually tell them. They focus on amounts of snow rather than overall impact. I agree with that. We get so wrapped up in whether or not it'll be 8 or 12 or 14 inches, when in reality it's just not going to be a nice day. So to sum it up, this is New England. It snows. I think they do the best they can, and they're actually right more times than we give them credit for. Boston TV covers a wide region, and most of us are just concerned with our little neck of the woods. I hope I always have the enthusiasm in life that Jim Cantore had that night he saw thunder snow.
Well, I heard it was a bus been out, plus cars are. Listen to that! Son of a... That's unbelievable! Oh, my goodness! Holy smoke! Just incredible!
I'm Pete Braley. Thanks for listening, and take care.